brings us to the final chapter of the unit. When is the test? A little bit less than a week from now, yes. So the final chapter is about membrane structure and function. And we've talked a little bit about membranes structure already. We see a review slide, really, in slide one, because this is part of what we have talked about. A membrane, by which I mean a subcellular membrane, I'm back to talking about the microscopic membranes now. A membrane, remember, is a phospholipid bilayer. Each individual layer is called a monolayer, which is made up of a side-by-side arrangement of individual phospholipids. And then one monolayer, and they're all arranged in the same way. So all these heads are next to each other, all the tails are next to each other, none of them is upside down. And then one monolayer is arranged together with the other monolayer in a tail-to-tail arrangement. Now, why does that happen automatically? Yeah.
Because one side is hydrophilic and likes the water, the other side is hydrophobic, so it stays.
That's right. And what do we say is true of phospholipids to give them the fact that, to indicate the fact that they are both polar and nonpolar?
Amphipathic.
Right. Each phospholipid is amphipathic, so there is a polar part and a nonpolar part. It's always the same part of any given phospholipid that is hydrophilic. That's the head in cartoon form, the gray circle. Why is the head hydrophilic? What is it about a phospholipid in general that makes the head hydrophilic? Well, yes, but that's just another way of saying it's hydrophilic. What molecularly makes the head polar? It has a phosphate. That's the phospho part of the word phospholipid. So the phosphate group, remember, is a phosphorus and four oxygens, but those oxygens are ionized, so it gives them charge. That's what makes it have no problem being around water, which is also polar. The tails are the hydrophobic parts of the phospholipid, and therefore nonpolar. Remember, hydrophobic and nonpolar go hand in hand. Hydrophilic and polar go hand in hand. But what is it that makes the tails hydrophobic? Right, except for that one end of the fatty acid, which each tail is. That one end is the carboxyl that allows it to join to the glycerol. Except for that one functional group, the entire rest of the fatty acid is hydrocarbon chain. It's just carbons and hydrogens. And by now you should be sick of me saying that carbon and hydrogen have about the same electronegativity, therefore they more or less equally share their electrons, and that means nonpolar. Well, nonpolar things try to avoid polar things, and that's why you have self-assembly into a phospholipid bilayer. That's how the first cells came into existence, or cell-like structures. But, as I've also said, slide 2 shows this, a complete plasma membrane can't be simply or purely a phospholipid bilayer. That's most of the structure, phospholipids arranged in a bilayer. But a living cell can't remain alive if that's all you have as the membrane. And that's because a phospholipid bilayer is selectively permeable. Certain things get through and certain things don't. And some of those certain things that don't get through actually need to get through in order for the cell to remain alive. If you only had phospholipids making up a plasma membrane, you wouldn't have living cells. So to solve that problem, there are all kinds of other things embedded in that substructure of phospholipids. And chief among those other things are proteins of various sorts, represented here by these purple globs. These are membrane-bound proteins because they are part of the membrane. Now, a protein that is embedded in a membrane-bound protein, is not anchored there by chemical bonds. There aren't any covalent bonds holding this, any of these individual proteins in the membrane. What holds the protein there is polarity as well. Okay, so we've just described why the bilayer exists for polarity reasons. Well, the membrane-bound proteins that you see here, you don't see the detail here, but remember how proteins in general are built. They each polypeptide is like a ribbon, right? End-to-end arrangement of amino acids folded into some three-dimensional shape. And remember, amino acids, some amino acids are polar, some of them aren't. Remember the groups? If you looked at the ribbon here, this part of the ribbon that's right next to the heads of the phospholipids happen to be sequences of amino acids that are polar. And say, so they don't mind being around these polar heads. Polar down here too. But this region of amino acids in the same polypeptide are made up of R groups that are nonpolar, and therefore they don't mind being around the fellow nonpolar tails of the phospholipids. Okay, that is what holds it in place. If you were to try to push this protein either out of the cell or into the cell by pushing it at either end, what you would be doing then is exposing a polar region with the nonpolar region of the membrane. You see that? And if you kept doing that, you could push it out. But if you just let go, it would spring back into place because the polar parts are trying to be around polar parts and not be around the nonpolar part of the membrane bilayer. Three. In slide three, we can see the two monolayers of a bilayer being split apart, which you can do with a careful special technique called freeze fracturing. That's what this represents. Get it cold and you can split the two apart more easily. And the reason this is done is to indicate what's true, illustrated by the photomicrographs on the right. When you do this technique, you find that both monolayers feature some proteins associated with that monolayer. But when you separate the two, you find that there's a lot more proteins associated with the inner layer, the layer that's in direct contact with the interior of the cell, the cytoplasm, than there are embedded in the external monolayer. And that makes sense because a lot of these proteins, although they are part of the membrane, interact with things inside the cell to make things happen. So it makes sense that there would be a higher population of proteins associated with that monolayer. Now to four. So we're ignoring all the other non-phospholipid things that are actually part of membranes. We're looking at just the phospholipid bilayer here. And the main point of this slide is to introduce what is called the fluid mosaic model. Of membrane structure. First of all, just let's consider these words. Mosaic, outside of biology, just in regular life, what does mosaic refer to? What is a mosaic? No artists, no visual artists in the crowd? You're all scientists. A mosaic is a piece of art in which pieces of glass or tile or whatever, instead of paint, for instance, are glued to some surface to make the image. All right, that's a mosaic. Fluid means flowing, able to flow. In other words, it's changing all the time. A mosaic piece of art doesn't do that. The pieces, whatever they are glued there permanently. They don't change places, in other words. Fluid mosaic describes the phospholipid bilayer because it's, first of all, like a mosaic. Here we're looking at this bilayer on edge. But if you were to view this from outside of the cell, in other words, above this and look down on it, you would just see a bunch of heads, right? Phospholipid heads. Each of which is like one tile in a mosaic. That's why they use the word mosaic in the phrase. But it's fluid because those phospholipids are not staying in place. Instead, they're moving around. They're changing places with each other all the time. This is analogous to a crowd of people. If you looked from a skyscraper down onto a mass of people like Times Square at New Year's Eve, right? A bunch of drunks, you see their heads. That's like the polar heads of the phospholipids. But if you take pictures throughout the night, the heads are not in the same place, right? The drunks are shuffling around. And that's exactly what happens with these phospholipids. They're continuously changing places. And pretty quickly, as a matter of fact, it might surprise you how quick. This lateral movement, which is one switching next to its neighbor, switching with its neighbor, happens about 10 to the 7th time, 10 million times per second. So don't think of a plasma membrane as being a static, unchanging device. It's highly dynamic. It's really rapidly moving all the time. You also see a possibility of a flip-flop, which is much more rare. Notice this happens about once a month. It should make sense that that's much more rare because a flip-flop, which is an exchange of one phospholipid in one monolayer with another phospholipid in the other monolayer. The reason that is rare is because if you imagine doing that, forcing that to happen, you're going to have to momentarily expose the head to the hydrophobic part, right? And the same is true for the other head until they get past center and then they'll spring into the other position. You see what I'm saying there? So it doesn't happen very often. But there's each monolayer is continuously moving around as far as the individual phospholipids are concerned. That's why it's called the fluid mosaic. And how fluid it is can be adjusted, and it's important for the fluidity to be able to be adjusted. Because for a cell to remain alive, its membrane has to be fluid, but it has to be the right amount of fluid. Too fluid is bad. It's too loose. Not fluid enough is bad. It's too tight. Well, the looseness or tightness of the membrane can change because of environmental conditions. If it gets hot, for instance, it's going to make everything looser. And it would be in danger of getting too loose. Just the opposite if it gets cold. It's too tight. Membranes can adjust that by adjusting what kind of phospholipids make up their membranes. So not only are the phospholipids moving around all the time, but cells are constantly changing what is allowed to be part of the membrane. Remember we talked about the membrane moving around? Things can be taken out of the membrane, things can be put in to change it. And so think back to when we talked about phospholipids in general, right after we talked about fats, right, which are similar. Except that fats aren't polar because they have three fatty acids and they don't have a polar head. It's a glycerol with three fatty acids, right? But remember when we talked about fatty acids, any individual fatty acid can be either saturated or unsaturated. And saturated ones, which have only single bonds, are nice and straight. They're the ones that pack together tightly. So if you have a phospholipid bilayer that's made out of phospholipids that use only only saturated fatty acids for the tails, then that's going to tighten up the membrane because it's going to pack them together more. But that would be an appropriate response if it gets too hot because it's in danger of being too loose. You can tighten it up by increasing the saturation fraction of your phospholipids, the fatty acids of those phospholipids. And just the opposite if it gets too cold, right? You can loosen it up by making your membrane out of phospholipids that have unsaturated fatty acid tails that are bent and therefore packed together more loosely. And in the bottom, we can see that animals, this applies to animals because we're looking at cholesterol here, which is an animal product. Cholesterol itself is a lipid. And we have already talked about other important reasons why animals require cholesterol. But here's another reason. Animal cell membranes, plasma membranes, contain cholesterol to a more or less degree, depending on the situation, because cholesterol also can help adjust the fluidity. Not only does it adjust that, but it can also, how much cholesterol is embedded in an animal membrane can affect the permeability of the membrane to ions, for instance. All right. Slide 5. Well, I just introduced the fluid mosaic model, but in science, you can't just say this is true. You have to demonstrate it with evidence. And that's what the experiment depicted in slide 5 seeks to do. So what they did here is start with a cell from each of two different species, a mouse and a human. And it shouldn't surprise you that a mouse cell features some proteins that are not found in humans and vice versa. So there are membrane-bound proteins here. The pink ones are mouse proteins found on mouse cells, obviously. Purple ones are human proteins. And the magenta and purple colors here are not just so you can tell the difference. Experimentally, they had to be able to tell the difference. So they didn't actually color them magenta and purple, but they chemically marked them so that they could keep track of which was which. And that was important because what they did then was take these two separate cells and fuse them into one cell. The membrane material, you can do that because membrane is membrane, basically. So now you have a hybrid cell that is half mouse and half human. Well, if the fluid mosaic model were not true, then the prediction would be that the mouse proteins would stay on that end of the hybrid cell, and the human proteins would stay on that end, because nothing would be moving around within the monolayers, right? Well, that's not what they found. It didn't take very long for there to be movement of both kinds of proteins. They're diffusing, basically, right? They're moving to where there's less of that type of protein. You have two kinds of particles. They're moving in separate directions down separate gradients. But they're able to do that because the proteins, just like the phospholipids that are around them, are able to move laterally, side to side, change position in the crowd. And so this is good evidence that the fluid mosaic model is actually true. Let's see what 6 is. I think we'll just stop there a little early today. I can finish this up next time.